Okay, well, thanks. And I'm joined today by Kumar Dasgupta, who is the IVSC's technical director, responsible for the Financial Instruments Board and working with the Financial Instruments Board on IVS 500. Thanks for joining us, Kumar. And I wonder if we could just kick things off with just an update from you, really, in terms of what the board has been focused on recently.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for organizing this. And yes, let me start by giving you a little bit of a background of what the board has been working on. Now, the board is in a unique position as of now because we are in what we would call the post-publication phase of IVS 500, which is the standard on financial instruments. So just to take you back and give a little bit of history, this amendments which were made to IVS 500 were significant. It was a significant improvement that was done by the board to get the standards on financial instruments in place. Now, given the post-publication, what the board has been focused on for the last year or so is how does it help constituents with the application of IVS 500, one, and second, how does it work with the IVS to bring about a greater degree of awareness about the requirements of the standard with regulators and our general constituents. So this has been the general focus, just the overall two themes of the focus areas of the board. Now, let me start by looking at how the board is looking at supporting implementation of the standard. Now, being such a major revision, the board realized that when constituents and valuers and institutions are looking to apply the standard, they inevitably will have certain questions about how to apply the standard. So, for the past 6 to 9 months, what the board has been working on is developing a series of frequently asked questions on the application of IVS 500. These questions will address some of the key topics like how do you do quality control, how do you apply the valuation processes that are prescribed in 500, and tries to answer them for constituents by referring back to the whole body of IVSs as and when required, and more specifically to IVS 500. The FAQs, what we are calling them generally, are in progress, and we are hoping to publish the first set of FAQs during this year. Now, the other point, Richard, which is important in this area of FAQs, is that the board decided that this will be a rolling document. As the implementation of IVS 500 progresses, there will be more questions that might come up from practice, and the aim of the board is to continue to update these FAQs as such questions come up. So it is not like one set of FAQs that's published and nothing else is done. This is something that will be an ongoing process for the board. This is the first part on supporting implementation. The second part that comes up is due to the unique position of financial instruments in the ecosystem of valuations. Now, if you look at the other asset classes like business valuation or tangible assets, they have, especially tangible, they have a very well-established VPO structure set up for qualifying valuers, and this structure is global. Similarly, to a lesser extent, with business valuation. So when you are using a valuer who is RICS qualified or belongs to a VPO set up in the area of business valuation, you get the quality assurance that comes with that. Unfortunately, in the world of financial instruments, other than a few exceptions like the AICPA, there are very few VPOs dealing with financial instruments. So what the board realized that however good the quality of the standards, it also has to be accompanied by a degree of professional competence that the valuers need to have. Now, in this regard, although this is not a technical topic, based on the request from the IVS's advisory forum and other regulators, the board worked on developing what is called a competency framework for a financial instrument valuer. Now, this is a basic requirements. Obviously, that has to be supplemented by individual jurisdictional needs and with CPD requirements. Again, that will be determined by the VPOs as they set up. But it sets out the basic platform for looking at what could be considered, who could be considered, or what qualifications will lead to you being considered as a valuer of financial instruments. Again, the board has finished deliberations on this, and it has been taken through the advisory forum. And again, we are hopeful we will get it. We are hopeful to publish this year.
Thanks, Kumar. That's a really helpful update. And as you alluded to there earlier, IVS 500 has, as you said, had an extensive update in the latest iteration of IVS. And I suppose it would just be helpful just as a reminder for the audience that you can access a copy of the IVS if you don't have it already from the IVSC's website, from the homepage. And true, your point there as well around VPOs, because of course IVSC has two stated objectives. One is the creation and setting of these international valuation standards, but the other, which is just as important and in fact integral, is promoting professionalism in the delivery of those valuations. So very relevant point. Now, you very recently appointed two new board members to the Financial Instruments Board. And I wondered, Kumar, if you could just give us a bit of background to who those individuals are and why it's important that you have new members coming into the board on a regular basis.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We appointed two new members. Now, this is a rolling process which is planned because board members have a certain specified term after which they have to roll out of the board. That is required by our constitution, as required by every other major standard setter in the world. So accordingly, every year, if not every year, every couple of years, there are vacancies that are generated with board members who roll off the board. And this year, we appointed two new members. That were because those were the two slots that became vacant, because we have a limit to the number of board members we can have, again, based on our due process and constitution. Now, the two members were Luca and Nicholas. And let me just give you a little bit of a background, what they do and specifically why they were brought in. As I was mentioning, Richard, we are now in the post-in publication phase, or where we are looking at people who can tell us, inform us, and help constituents implement IVS 500. So what the skill set specifically that the board was looking for when recruiting the members was exactly this: people who are working in the field, have knowledge and deep experience in implementing fair value structures and leading large fair value engagements or teams, so that they can inform the board about the application challenges and what are the areas that we could look at to help with the implementation. So Luca has certainly got that. He's currently heading the private credit side of things for S&P. Similarly for Nicholas, who's heading up a significantly large team, and for Crédit Agricole, one of the largest banks out of France and in the world, and is involved day to day in the process of valuation of financial instruments, and is absolutely qualified to help us develop IVS 500 and the questions and answers that we are looking at to develop to help people implement the standard. So these are the two new board members who have come on board. It will keep on happening every year due to the rotation process where board members roll off after they finish their terms. And they have just started, and we are looking forward to working with them for over the next few years.
That's great, Kumar. Thanks. And of course, you'll be meeting again in person next month, which is June, in Prague, and later in the year as part of our AGM in Delhi. I know that the Financial Instruments Board meets regularly virtually as well. But can you give us a bit of a flavour for what might be on the agenda when you come together in Prague next month and perhaps later in the year?
Yeah, of course. The Financial Instruments Board meets regularly every month over video conference, but as per its terms also and what it agreed, it was decided that it has to meet physically twice a year at least. So these are the two physical meetings that are planned, which is Prague, which is just next month, And October, which is meeting with along with the AGM, the IVSC AGM in Delhi. Now, October is a bit further out. We haven't fleshed out the agenda, so we will do that in due course. But Prague is something where the way the board works is that it sets up various working groups to look at each of the problems or the areas that it wants to address. Now, the working group that was set up to look at the competency framework and the FAQs, they have finished their work. And what the key focus in Prague will be on the FAQs, the frequently asked questions. The board will review the FAQs, look at the structure, whether the questions are appropriate, and whether it agrees very critically with the answers that they are giving. And the aim is to approve the FAQs that have been developed so that these can then be sent to the Standards Review Board for their consideration and approval. The other thing that the board will also be doing in Prague is meeting with various constituents, because there's a conference planned, and also meeting with the various regulators and the key people in the administration, like the Central Bank and the Ministry of Finance, the banking regulators, during the meeting to actually talk about IVS 500 and how IVS 500 can help regulators with their objective. Now, why is this a key area? Because this is also a part of their implementation support, where it has also set up a substream of work, which is to focus on building awareness on IVS 500. So as part of that work stream, these meetings have been organized in Prague. That's what they will be looking at. And also they'll be looking at the technical topic of valuation risk, which I don't want to go into too much detail, but is a key component of the standards. Because depending upon how risky you think a valuation is, will drive to a large extent how much controls and how much effort you need to put into the valuation as with the standards. So the board will also be talking about valuation risk and how do we define it, what guidance we give around it. And this is a topic that also arose from the agenda consultation.
That's great. Thank you, Kumar. And of course, we'll get a chance to catch up again before the meetings that take place in Delhi at the end of the year as part of the AGM, yes. Because we will do these this podcast again before then. But thank you for the update on the upcoming meetings in Prague, which is very interesting. Now, you talked about speaking to external constituents and to regulators and central banks and other entities. And I know that one live topic or conversation areas with IOSCO. And I wondered if you could just share a few insights on how that interaction is progressing.
Absolutely, Richard. And I'll bring you in towards the end, because you are one of the key people involved in organizing and putting in place the webinars that the board is talking about. So I'll bring you in with that. But let me address the IOSCO bit first. Now, just to give a background to the people who might not be familiar with what is IOSCO. IOSCO is the global body of securities regulators. So anytime you look at a stock market and you want to do any activity in the stock market, you have to comply with the jurisdiction, the regulations in the jurisdiction. So for example, it will be in UK, the UK Stock Exchange regulations or the FSA. IOSCO is the global body where every securities regulator in the world is involved, and they set the overall global requirements for securities regulation. Now, because it's markets where fair value is critical, they're very interested in IVSs, of course, because we try and our standards aim to improve the quality and consistency of valuations worldwide. And in this context, the FI board had a detailed discussion and presentation with what's called Committee 5 of IOSCO. And that's the committee that looks at all regulation involving investment management that involves private equity, venture capital, exchange traded funds, hedge funds, private and public. So there was a detailed interaction between the chair, vice chair, and myself and Committee 5 on the how IVS 500 can help their objective, which is same as ours. How do we improve the consistency and quality of fair values of financial instruments globally, not only for financial reporting, but for any other kind of reporting? So that was a key interaction. That happened during this period. There have been a number of other smaller meetings that go on with board members when they talk to constituents. We talk to the banks, like our vice chair regularly talks to the banks in a forum which is organized by us in New York, where banks come and talk to us about their valuation challenges. These meetings are continuous.
But that's a really interesting update. Thank you, Kumar, for your time and for sharing some updates from the Financial Instruments Board. We'll look forward to catching up with you again in just a few months' time.
Thanks, Richard.